Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 100-Year Real Estate Investor. We're your hosts, Jake and Gino, and this is a show dedicated to long-term personal financial engineering. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, how's Aristotle doing over there, bro? How you doing?
Objectivism, bro. Get it right before you get it wrong. All right, we got a great guest today. Today's guest is an acclaimed author and international speaker. He is also the host of The Money Show. So without further ado, Andrew Cordell, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, happy to be here, brother. I love you guys' show, man. It's informative and philosophical. It's like who you guys combined here.
Now, the reason why I called...
Who is John Galt? All right, that's all I got to say about that.
The reason why I called Mr. Stenziano Aristotle is we're talking about money and the rules of money on this show. And Andrew wants to go it from a philosophical level and also from maybe a structural level. But we need to get into the mindset first, because I always say there's a poor mindset, a middle-class mindset, and a wealthy mindset. And I've been all three, right? And once you adopt a wealthy mindset, there's no going back. So I think let's dive into philosophy first.
Most people, they might have heard the concept of a poor mindset and a rich mindset. But there's actually one more mindset, which is the wealthy mindset, which is the most important one when it comes to money. And they are not the same. No three of those are the same. And you can go from poor straight to the wealthy mindset. You don't have to like stop in rich town. You can just change to the wealthy mindset. But it's a great point that a lot of people don't understand that you just mentioned there. When it comes to the mindset, you talk about the philosophy of the middle class or you know, you could call the poor mindset. To me, it goes deeper than just when you talk about the philosophy and understanding it. It goes deeper into your childhood. And what you have to understand if you're listening right now and you're trying to figure out how does money work, how does wealth work, the biggest thing I struggle with forever is that I never took the time to reprogram my brain. And I cannot stress that point enough to you, because you used the word a while ago, self-sabotage. And it is amazing how you could go get some money, you could go, you know, do a deal, whatever it is, and have some money. But you will always self-sabotage, because the mindset that you're having was put into your head at an early age without you understanding it, knowing it. It's just that this time of life, that's where you were. Your brain was wide open into learning. And what you heard was people, family, mom, dad, or aunt, uncle, whatever it is, you heard them say things that you don't understand this, but they are so deeply ingrained into your mind right now, that for you to get to that wealthy mindset, you're going to have to reprogram that brain. Because you talk about poor and wealthy mindsets, right? When you have that poor mindset, all of us at this podcast now could all start saying statements that we've all heard, right? Money doesn't grow on trees. Well, actually, that's not true, because money's paper and paper comes from trees. So actually, that whole thing was a freaking lie, because it does come from trees, actually. But
if you have a tree farm, you cut that sucker down and sell the damn things. So, you know,
right. But, you know, it's this subconscious program that we were given of, you know, money is bad. Wealthy people are evil. People that have money are taking advantage of other people. And all that was programmed in our brains. Mm-hmm. And so that as we grow, even when we try to become an entrepreneur, even when we try to go invest, even we have a little bit of success, your operating system is being run off of a still broken software system. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing you can do when it comes to philosophy and understanding is reprogram that brain, because the wealthy, go to the wealthy side for a second, they don't say those things. Those things never come in their brain. It's what you just talked about. You know, when you said, I want to own X, whatever it is. I want to own this nice car. I want this nice house. I want to, whatever it is, right? Their brains are just wired differently. Their brains don't say money doesn't grow on trees, or that it's evil or bad or whatever it is. Their brain says, okay, how do I pay for that? Mm-hmm. And then it says, how do I pay for it? What that leads into is what you brought up. Okay, well, what asset can I go buy that will create me cash flow now, that will pay for what I want in life right now, so that I can, once I have that, I kind of always have it, and I just go past there, I'm gonna go buy another asset. But it's two totally different mindsets, and it happened as a kid.
There's folks that we've had interactions with that struggle with money guilt. They may be on their come up, they may be getting their first few multifamily acquisitions, and in that process, they're leaving the folks at the pub in the local town, the high school friends, whoever, maybe behind, and there's this whole kind of circle of guilt surrounding them. I'm not okay with the money. Now I'm going off and doing this, and I'm flying to the city to buy this multifamily property. My neighbor is like thinking I'm weird now, and they're not comfortable with it. They're kind of hating on me. Any advice for people going through that? Because it's such a real example, and we speak to Jake and Gina members all the time that are going through this, and it's a real struggle for folks dealing with that guilt, and also the people in the inner circle that don't get it and maybe hating a little bit. I'm sure you've gone through it, Andrew.
For sure. I would separate those into two different buckets first. Okay. And the first bucket is the one of feeling money guilt. And yeah. Boy, that is so powerful. People just don't understand how powerful money guilt is. Because again, because of the philosophy that you have as a kid, because of what you were programmed as, that money is bad and wealthy people are, you know, evil and wealthy people.
Money makes you do bad things. Money makes you do stupid things. Look at the idiot with the Lambo. He just ran it into a pole, like on and on. Yeah.
On and on. Look at these people that went bankrupt. They lost everything. And that's what the poor mindset talks about, is they talk about how people lost everything, et cetera. Right. And so that guilt that you have is because of what you are now subconsciously puking back up as your reality, because in your brain, you're programmed to actually believe that money is bad and that money is evil. And so when you start getting it, you have this internal struggle, because as humans, we do not want to be an evil person. We don't want to be a bad person. We want to actually do really good things with our money. But because your hardwire or your software, your software inside your body is telling you that money is actually evil and bad and not good and you're going to lose everything, it then gives you this massive amount of guilt. So the only way to get rid of that guilt is to, again, go back, reprogram it, and put in your mind and into your subconscious of what the money is actually really for. And what are you actually going to do with this money? Because there's a massive amount of guilt there. But when you can reprogram the guilt with the outcome or the product of money, right? So to overcome the guilt, what I would tell people is, if we were talking there, I'd say, hey, let's set everything aside for a second. If you did have whatever the number is, right? I'm just making a number up. If you did have that $1 million, but $5 million, okay, what would you do with it? And you keep going to that line of what they would do with it. And you got to reprogram your brain to understand what I'm going to do with it is I'm going to change my family. I'm going to change my kids' future. I can change my parents' situation, where they live. I can, but then it goes deeper. The more money you have, it's like, well, I can change my church. I could change, I could help people that don't have water, et cetera, right? And mm-hmm. You actually have to reprogram with and understand that money is a freeing possibility. Think about this. When most people talk about money, what they always will say is, I want financial, and there's that word, freedom. Money is very, very freeing, but the mindset you have is guilt versus freedom. But then they'll talk about, I want freedom. This is why I started the Money Is Show, because it's not actually, when you just say money, if the answer is money is financial freedom, it's like, but what does that actually mean? Like, what do you mean freedom? And that's where you can reprogram your brain. The second piece of that question there is, you have those friends, and it's very true. You have those high school friends, you have those college friends, a PTA friends at school right now. And as you start doing things, there is going to be a natural separation of, not that the friendship doesn't have to be there, but you have to understand, when it comes to money, birds of a feather flock together. And so when you're leaving that nest of where they don't all have money, they don't understand money, they don't understand the game of money, they still think money is bad, and you're leaving that nest, it doesn't make sense to them. So their only thing they can do is, unfortunately, out of either one of two things, out of fear or out of self, their own guilt, they attack you.
Fear was ingrained from generations. Right. Yeah. You're going to step out there. You're going to lose it all. So it's a full circle. Right. And I just want to say one thing about you're acquiring the money ethically, and money is simply a byproduct of the value that you created for others. So the people with the guilt, you know, they're getting it. They could feel guilty because of certain things, but it's also, you got to understand, you're not going out there and stealing. You're providing value to a neighbor, and that's the reward for your efforts.
Here's a unique one that people do not like to hear. This one, because this one stings, is by in the poor mindset, by you not taking action, by you not changing your philosophy, and then and understanding the tactical side of it, and then moving forward. I could easily right here tell you that you are the selfish one, not me.
Think about it. You've squandered the at-bat that was given to you. You've squandered the at-bat that was given to you, you did not take action, and you're not living your life to its fullest extent. That's being selfish. You had value you could give back to the world, and you refused to do it. You didn't take full responsibility, and many times you may have been lazy. Maybe you're scared. I'm not trying to go, you know, completely off the rails here, but dude, you had a chance, and you didn't take it.
If you look at a tombstone, it always says, you know, it'll say my tombstone, Andrew Cordell, 1982. Dash.
Yeah, that's a good year, dude. That's when I was born.
It was 82? Yeah. All of them. 82 dash of Gino. What is yours?
I'm 1970.
Oh, my bad. In it.
Killing me, bro.
Dash, whatever it is.
You look good for a 60-year-old, bro. Oh, it's so messed up. Oh, I just got the finger from the G-Net. Oh, Andrew, I'm sorry.
They didn't see that. I'm not on camera. Now they see me on camera. Hey, everybody.
All right, sorry, bro. You know, 2060. And what we're talking about here, Jake, is the dash. Think about this. What your life is that dash. The year that you're born, the year that you died. As you land that grave right there, to never move again in that grave, there's a little dash right there. And what we're really talking about is, what did you accomplish in that dash? That dash is what makes up your life, is that little bitty dash right there. And what happened was, it was your time to bat. It was your time to swing. It was your time to shoot the game-winning shot. It was your time to do it. And you chose to go back to the dugout and then blame everybody else for it. And again, I'm not attacking the person. I don't want people to understand. I'm not attacking you. I'm trying to inspire, motivate, explain in any way that me, Jake, and Gino
embrace the struggle. It's okay. It's okay.
We all had to go through it. We all did. But you're going to have to overcome it and take that swing at the plate, man.
Do you guys mind if I share two stories real quick that really dive into what you guys have been talking about? Sure. The first one, go back to Jake and Gino show. We had Luke Wren on, and he's famous for saying it at MM4, your language becomes your experience. And write that down, everybody. Your language becomes your experience. In 2008, the Great Recession is around, and my mom is like, you know, we have to stay small. Don't take any risk. We have one restaurant. So my mindset was, can't take any risks, can't go anything. And within 5 or 6 years, I had 1,500 multifamily apartment units. How does that happen? One restaurant for 20 years, dealing in that mindset. All of a sudden, I get with my partner, Jake, and then in 5 years, different mindset. I went from thinking small to scaling up and becoming an entrepreneur. All of a sudden, different words, different experience, cap rate, cash on cash return, equity, refi and roll. My language became my experience in that endeavor. I couldn't get out of the kitchen in the restaurant business, making $12 an hour doing washing dishes. That was the mindset. That's very important for everybody to understand that. What is your language? What words are you using? Andrew spelled it out beautifully. Figure out what the words you're using internally, the words that you're learning every single day. And more importantly, what are the words you're using with your kids? My 16-year-old having lunch right now, she's like, Dad, you got 3 deals in the hopper. Can I put in 10 grand?
Oh,
can I put in 10 G's? My son is like, you know what? He's already 6 figures freaking net worth. He's going, I want to invest with Jake and Gene. I want to work as an intern in Jake and Gene. I haven't told this to Jake. He goes, because in 2 years, I want to start investing dollar for dollar in your thing too. So he'll intern with me for the next 2 years for the opportunity to invest with us. How many young adults want to do that? Not many.
You know, he's trying to get out of busting those tables, bro. He gets it.
16, making $16 an hour busting tables. I wasn't making, I never made that. You got to work hard. That's the first thing. So your language, everybody, becomes your experience. And the second part, the reason what I used to get out of the restaurant industry and the restaurant business was, to me, it was sinful what I was doing. I'm using what Andrew's talking about. I was created for more. We're all created for more. I had an amazing family. My parents were great. I had everything that I needed. I just felt as if I was being lazy and I wasn't living up to my potential that God gave me. And that's what motivated me. At first, it's fear. Fear holds you back, but then get to that, what we call that level two, which is anger and that catabolic energy. And then all of a sudden from there, you'll start taking action and you'll start calling the brokers and you'll start talking to your partners and you'll start figuring out to buy a duplex and then maybe a quad and things start happening. But to me, that's what I used. I didn't want to be that person who is stuck when they're 48 years old, looking back and going, man, I'm still doing the same thing. COVID shut down my restaurant. I've only got one stream of income. I knew that was coming sooner or later, and it's coming for all of us. And if you're a religious person, you're practicing Catholic, practicing Christian, look at it from that perspective. We're built for more.
I have a question. If we got to get to the tactical side of it a little bit, is there a way that you treat savings, and is there any rules that go along with that? Say a percent that you save, or is there a percent that you invest? Have you thought about it at that level, and do you break it down?
Not at the level that I'm at right now. Everybody's different. Everybody has a different risk tolerance, so forth, right? Inside of it. And, you know, going back to kind of the point that Gina was making right there, which is 100% dead on, one thing that I circle back to is that it doesn't mean, if you're listening, that we're saying that you have to go start a business or you have to go do this deal. You can, like what his children are doing, it's okay for you to just be the investor and the steward of your money that's putting it in a place that gives you the returns and the dividends that you're looking, that you need, that you should have, that you qualify for in life. So just don't understand that. We're not saying that you just got to go. You have
it
to
could
go.
Sound critical, but it's not meant to be. Yeah. So, but I love challenging people to live their best life and to put themselves out there and to struggle and see what happens when you do that. So there is a component there. Yeah.
So when it comes to me for the saving side, again, right now where I'm at, I'm all invest. And if I can, I'll tell you a story that helped me a lot. When I interviewed Kevin O'Leary, about money and
the dividend king.
And so I talked to him and I've heard this example given a lot. And this also goes a little bit in the rules of money, which we can get to later as well. But he gave an example. He said, you know what he said, Drew? He said, I view money as war. And I was like, wow, war. That's a unique one. And he said, look, the way that I view this is I'm the general and there's a war and my money are soldiers. My job as a general is to, if I want to be successful as a general war, I have to keep my men alive and I need to grow my land or have prisoners that join our side. I need to grow inside the war as well. And so he said, I look at it as my soldiers need to go to war every day. I need to make sure they're investing. We talk about money, that I'm putting them, the soldiers, in the best case scenario, the best strategy for that battle, if you will. But now apply to money. He said, my job as my money manager is I put my money in the best position to keep it safe, not be stupid with it, be a good steward of it, investing it. And then when my soldiers come back from war, they should bring me the dividends of the war. He said, I know this sounds brutal, but he said, business is brutal. Life is brutal. And you have to understand this is a fight that you're going to get into. And so he said, I view money as war, and my dollars are my soldiers, and I got to keep them safe and grow. And he said, when you have that mindset, it's not about sitting back and hiding in your castle and hoping nobody comes and takes you over. It's about taking action, keeping them safe and growing. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a very unique philosophy.
Dude, I got a more sick way to look at it if you thought that was bad. We actually call them money soldier babies. And so in multifamily, we're looking at it saying, you're putting your soldiers out there, they're going to war, they're acquiring the asset, but then they need to reproduce. It starts, you start growing the village, and there's two ways they do it. One, they have big, swaths of kids with a refi. You pull that back off money soldier babies, and then the cash flow. So I absolutely love it. I probably subconsciously got that from him at some point, because I've enjoyed his content, but we've like joked internally about money soldier babies and I absolutely love it. I think it's fantastic. So
yeah. And it's the money. It's actually one of the money rules that are out there.
Yeah.
You have to make your money work. You have to make your money go
and reproduce. We got to grow the villages, right? We want money soldier babies. Let's go.
It's your responsibility. This is where the 401k we were talking about earlier, Jake and Gino, is part of the mistake with the 401k that people don't understand when they're investing in 401k right now, the standard way they work a job, they put them in the 401k. When we start talking about investing, their brain says, I am investing. I have a 401k. We're the same. We're investing. And I want to make sure you guys understand, if you're listening, that is not what we were talking about. From the standpoint of when you find people that have money, they're in control of their money. They know where they're putting their money. They know where it's going into. They don't have to be an expert at apartments you mentioned Turo side of it, but they if they want to invest in that, they know who is the expert that can go, and they'll move their money into that. They don't, in the 401k, it's the opposite. What you're doing inside a 401k is you're just giving your money to a, and I'll use this word so lightly because I hate.
I feel like it's irresponsible and lazy. I'm sorry. I just do.
100% it is. But again, it also goes back to this lack of not understanding it and lack of not knowing, but that's what you are. You're being very lazy with your money. You're being very.
I think I understand money well, and I don't get it. I don't understand how, you know, I don't get it. Just saying, so, you know,
what happens is you
I'm not putting my money there.
I'm putting this in quotations if you're listening, a financial advisor. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that our society has ever made is by, it's a branding term. I love branding, if you follow me. And what a freaking genius brand that they, that financial advisors has deemed their title. Because when you hear the word financial advisor and you don't know, understand money, and so you go to whatever it is, an Edward Jones or whatever, I'm not making Charles Schwab, whatever.
Here's an exploit. Yeah.
And to me, if we, if as a society for money, we would be much better off if we call them financial salesmen.
Yep. Because
if you call them financial salesmen.
I don't want to go to the financial salesman. That feels a little icky now.
If I
like a car salesman. Is he going to rip me off?
Exactly.
Oh, he probably is. Fee, fee, fee. Here we go.
If you viewed him as a financial salesman, your mindset would be different of how, what advice they were giving you. Because the advice they're truly giving you is for you to give them your money and let them go make money with your money. That's literally what is taking place inside that world. And you're getting at best, the table scraps, the leftover of the leftover is all you're going to get in that model right there.
Jake and I, we started the 100-year real estate investor because we both love whole life insurance. And what we're doing is the dual asset strategy. We're putting money into whole life and people are like, oh, that's a terrible investment. It's not an investment, everybody. It's an asset. It's long-term. It has living benefits and debt benefits. And I'm able to pull that out day one. So I'm not living off of this. I don't need all my dollars at risk. I want some dollars here. So I'm planning for my estate. I've got policies on all of my kids because it's really more of a mindset. It's really saving. It's an expense on the front end. I want them to understand that they need to save this money, but now they have the ability to access this money, not like a 401k, and you're able to pull that money out. So creating two assets from one, not many poor people with that poor mindset are going to do that. But the people who are wealthy, like the Bank of Americas, like the Rockefellers, like the Schwab family, like the Edison, they understand how this works. And they know that it's an amazing strategy, but it's called long-termism. And that's what the wealthy mindset has also. They're not looking, getting rich the next year, the next 2 years, the next 3 years. It takes years, 5, 10, 15 to build.
The Rockefeller dynasty is still kicking.
Yeah. And, you know, can you talk about a couple more rules, Andrew, as far as, you know, long-termism is one big rule on money. Do you have any other highlight ones that you'd like to share with us?
Of course. On the insurance, though, to make sure we're on the same page there, because I think, and again, we didn't talk about this. I think that what you're referring to, I was going to make sure before I talk about it, in the life insurance side, you're really talking about the infinite banking side.
Yes.
Listen, that people do not understand the power of what you just said. It's so hard to understand because you have Dave Ramsey running around screaming about whole life insurance.
He's a life insurance salesman, though. It's the same thing as the financial advisor salesman. Dave's getting kickbacks on term life insurance out the wazoo because that's his folks. So he's incentivized to do it.
It is a game changer for your life, understanding for your kids, for your future, how that long-term strategy and protection. That's another thing people don't understand. Mm-hmm. The very good three rules I always talk about when it comes to money is, from a philosophy standpoint, is you have to know how to create it, keep it, and protect it. Okay, those are the three like foundational points of money. How do you create money? Okay, that means that you are doing something, like you're investing it, you're moving it, you're putting it here, you're putting it here, you're creating it. Number two, how do you keep it? Meaning, how do you structure the deals where when you make X amount of dollars, you get to keep those dollars? Most entrepreneurs run in a giant rat race, but they feel like they're not in the rat race. You know, the rat race is like when you work paycheck by paycheck. I mean, if you understand entrepreneurship, majority of all entrepreneurs are in a rat race. It's just a different rat race. They just go from either a house to a house, or a deal to a deal, or a wholesale to a wholesale, whatever the trinket that they're doing is. But they're still in a rat. They're still in a freaking rat race. Into it. And at the end of the year, they go to see.
They got to sell another thing, or they got to do the, you know, do the next sale. So it's they got to keep killing. Whereas you actually invest into long term assets. We can check out right now. We're good. We can check out, and they're going to keep paying, and it's okay. That's the difference.
You keep the money that you make, and the third one is protection. And when you find wealthy people, I promise you,
it's the shield.
They all can talk about those three things. It's your blue in the face, like all different strategies about creating, keeping, and protecting it. And on your point of insurance, what one reason I love the insurance side is because on the infinite banking side is because not only does it create me money, not only does it create me massive death benefit, not like $1 million. Like I have massive death benefits policies. Not only does it do that for my family, but it also,
and you've bought those, you're not renting them. So in 10 years, when they won't re you up for term, it doesn't matter. You bought this damn thing. It's with you for life. It's whole life for life. That's the difference with the, that's why I love it. Yeah.
And the protection from it. Look, if you're in business, you're investing, you're in business, you're out there playing in our society, sooner or later, you're going to get sued. And right, wrong, different. We can talk about that in a different podcast, but it's just life. I mean, you get in a car accident, you're going to get sued. The great thing about, again, understanding money, the laws of money, is how do you protect it? And one of the great benefits of the life insurance is the protection that it provides you on top of the creating it angle of it, but it provides you the protection side because those policies right there have judgment and creditor proof. And most people don't understand how important that is until you go get sued and have a judgment against you, because now you have instant creditor proof. Way stronger than an LLC. When you talk about asset protection and people start talking about LLCs and C-Corps and so forth, those are beginner levels of asset protection. Getting into infinite banking is giving you high level from the government, not from an attorney. That's straight from government passed a law that said the life insurances are protected from creditors and judgments. I don't even have to hide it. I don't have to go shell game. I can show it to the judge and say, here, I have this policy. Here's what it
is. He's on the continent, folks. He's not even offshoring it.
Exactly. I have offshore stuff. But when I started to learn about infinite bank, I got Cook Islands and a trust and so forth. But when you start talking about infinite banking, it's like, wait a second. I don't have to bury this in 95 trust different. I can just show it to the judge if I lose. So last thing, I'm going to move on from this. Check this out right here. Love me, dude. It's hard to see. You know that right there on my wall behind me. You guys can see that wall right there. I have some of the greatest entrepreneurs that ever lived that have gone past on before us that built crazy stuff. I love history and entrepreneurship. This is Cornelius Vanderbilt. Yes. And that is his actual autograph of Cornelius Vanderbilt, certified autograph Cornelius Vanderbilt. When that family was alive, that was one of the wealthiest families. They were the wealthiest family ever to live when he was alive. Mm-hmm. And if you ever been to North Carolina, the Vanderbilt.
Dude, we take a trip every year. We have a retreat every year for our team up to the Biltmore. Beautiful.
Our house.
Yep. It's insane.
Okay. But then look at this one. This one right here. That guy right there. That is John D. Rockefeller.
That's the rock. That's the real rock right there.
Certificate signed by John D. Rockefeller. So I collect the original autographs. That one's from 1883. The difference between those two men right there, both were, Vanderbilt was actually wealthier than Rockefeller at the time. When, if you look at their wealth now, okay, there's only one of us wealthy, and it's the Rockefellers, not the Vanderbilts.
Why?
Mm-hmm. They just did a massive study on this, and they showed that, like, out of the 117 families from the Vanderbilt that were left, only like 10 of them even had $1 million left of their name. Only 10 of them. And this guy was richer than Jeff Bezos is today. You're talking in the billions of dollars. Only 10 had even $1 million. Rockefellers, still to this day, one of the wealthiest, most powerful families on the face of the earth because of one thing that he did. It's what we're talking about. Infinite banking insurance. It's the insurance that these guys are setting up that is such a key to their success. You get to make money twice on the same dollar. Like it's so frustrating because I can't explain it like enough to people until they just go do it of what it can do for you. And this is the difference. One family's pretty much broke right now. And one family's the wealthiest family on the face of the planet because of they understood the family like type of insurance that we're talking about here that creates it for the entire family as it grows and grows and grows. The whole family has it.
Check out the 100YearREI.com because we talk about this stuff and it's important, but it does come down to long-termism. You're not getting rich overnight, but you're protecting it. I'm going to repeat that again, everybody. Number one is you want to create the money. Number two is you want to keep the money. And number three is you want to protect the money. That's what a financial advisor, a planner should be doing. You have a castle. He should be helping you build a moat around your castle. That's a true financial planner. Not many of them out there. There are ones out there. There are good ones out there, and there are bad ones, just like every other profession. But if you have a true one, he's looking at your best interests. He's not, he or she's not only out there trying to sell you a product, but they're trying to really create. And like Jake said, as far as nutrition, same thing. All of our bodies are different. All of our assets, all of our lifestyles are different. So if you can find one that really helps you create that plan for yourself to protect those assets, and think of all of your assets as that castle, and you need that moat around it. And I think whole life insurance is one of those moats around that castle for the short term, because you're using the money for that opportunity cost, but also for the long term, because you're continuing to, you know, on average 4 to 5% dividends over the last 150 years plus. So you're using that $1, you're getting those two assets from that $1. So, preaching, brother.
You know, I'm not an insurance salesman, but as a person who understands money, if you don't understand what it is, freaking get off of this podcast when we're done. And which, what was your website you said go to? 100REI?
Yeah, 100YearREI.com.
But go look at it, because once you start to understand it, you're like, what have I been missing? What did my grandparents miss out on?
Are you interested in building a future in multifamily real estate? Would you like to meet like-minded individuals? If the answer is yes, you'll want to pay close attention to this. Jake and Gino are often asked about putting on a multifamily event where individuals just starting their journey in multifamily can meet like-minded individuals and gain high-level education as opposed to bits and pieces online. Jake and Gino have decided to create something we've never seen anywhere else. We're calling these our pop-up meetups because we're going to get together for a few hours and discuss the three pillars of any successful real estate deal: buy right, manage right, and finance right. The next Jake and Gino pop-up meetup is March 18th, 2022 in Austin, Texas. For more information, just click the link below. Attendance is limited, so you'll want to reserve your spot today. We look forward to meeting you in person at our brand new pop-up meetup this March in Austin.
You know, when I started studying money at a very deep, high level, like, you know, I was still in the rich mindset. And I was like, man, what am I missing? You're like, what is it that I'm not... in the other side, I'm in the wealthy, and it was driving me crazy. And I literally spent deep diving on understanding money. And a unique thing is, go study the history of it, my friend. Go study the history of it. And when you start studying the history of the 401k, when it came about, all that different stuff, how they were doing it, how they shifted from the companies taking care of their employees when they retired after 30 years with pensions, and they stopped those and said, okay, actually, you're going to pay for it yourself. And we're going to give you this account over here, and you go put your own money into it. And by the way, when you put your money into it, I say we, what I mean by the we is money's a game, and there's two teams, contributors and creators. There's only two teams, contributors and creators in this teams. And the creators are the ones who own the companies. The contributors are the one who contribute to the 401k. And then who runs all that money? It goes back to the creators. The money always is up on the creator's side. Just go study that side of it, man. It's crazy going to see the history of money and the 401k.
Wow. Andrew, love being on these shows with you. I mean, I can do this every week. I mean, that's the thing, everybody. One last thing. We're ready. Our state, our level of energy is risen. We know right now that we can go out and we can kick ass for the rest of this day. We've sat together with three people. This is what we call a little mini mastermind. We've, you know, found commonality. We've learned from each other, and we're ready to actually go out and to create. That's what you need to create money. You need to have ideas. And now I hope you've gotten a lot of ideas from the show. Maybe you've heard of whole life insurance and said, that's just crazy. What are you nuts for? Explore it. You never know what's on the other side. And finally, just emulate the people that you want to follow and become. Just emulate those people out there, everybody.
Andrew, Gina, it's been fun. I really appreciate you both. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, guys.